Greetings, horror fans, and welcome to episode 218 of Frightmares. I'm your host, Austin Proctor, and joining me today for the first time ever, no, I'm just kidding, first time in a long time is my wife, Gabrielle Proctor.
Really? You're going to full name me?
I always do that. It's been so long since you've been on the show, you've forgotten.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, well, and I think the second guest appearance by our tiny baby, CJ, who is just
sleeping precariously over
yes,
here.
Strapped to your chest in a very odd fashion. But we're going to try and do this and see what happens. Hopefully she doesn't get crazy, but you never know because she's going through a leap right now, and we'll see what happens.
You know, it's hard learning how to people.
Yeah, I'm sure we were all there at one point, but can't tell you what it was like because that was 30-something years ago, so...
Yep.
Yikes. Today, we are starting off Scream Factory September with one of our favorites, Lake Placid from 1999. We did this one a while ago, back when we were doing 27 movies, an episode. I think last week's episode as well said the same thing because we had also done that movie, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. But we're giving this one the full episode treatment because it deserves it, and I feel like this is very underappreciated and underrated. So
fucking facts.
Big facts, and besides the fact of the cast, I think I figured out why this movie's so good, and once we get to the IMDb roundup, I will tell you then, because the people behind the movie did not realize there was that many awesome people, so get there eventually.
Yeah, but this particular movie holds an extremely special place in my heart, because this is a movie I frequently watched with my family. This is one of our family films.
It's fine. It's not that violent.
No, this is just it's one of those movies. I don't even know how we owned it, but we did, and we watched it, I mean, all the time.
Sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it was pretty strange now as an adult being like, why did we watch this movie so much? I mean, it's amazing, but it's just so funny that we're like, we'll put this on with the children.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much foul language and not too much gore, but there's enough there to be like, maybe we shouldn't show this to the children.
Yeah, maybe? No, that didn't really deter them.
Well, we will get there soon enough. I would like to tell you about some things that I have found. Starting with, it's been a long day. We went out to see Haunted Mansion. That's right, we got to talk about that.
We did.
And then we had Chicago-style deep dish pizza, which we've never had, and it was absolutely delicious. Was that her?
No, that was me.
You might hear strange noise emitted from Gabby's microphone, and that's because there's a sleeping baby who may or may not exclaim at random. So,
or suck on her pacifier so very loud,
so aggressively. Anyways, let's start off with some horror news here with The Exorcist Believer. We are getting it a week earlier thanks to T-Swift. Well, I guess not really thanks to, but she's to blame. So the bad news is The Exorcist Believer has lost its release date, and oddly enough, it is all to do with Taylor Swift. The good news, horror lovers are actually going to get the chance to see the film earlier than expected, as its release has actually been pushed up a week by Universal Pictures and Blumhouse Productions. Luckily, this isn't one of those situations where we're going to have to wait longer to see something. And I'm okay with that because the same thing happened with Saw. So that's two movies that we are getting earlier, two horror movies. So what happened exactly? Originally, David Gordon Green's R-rated sequel to The Exorcist was scheduled to arrive on Friday, October 13th. Which seemed like a fitting date. However, Grammy-winning artist Taylor Swift just announced that she is releasing a concert film, Taylor Swift, The Eras Tour, in theaters on the same day.
I'm not going to lie. Part of me kind of wants to see it because every clip I've seen of that tour, it does look like a great concert.
I'm not disputing that. You know, I'm not going to argue against it. But it's also like, first of all, Taylor, don't you have enough fucking money?
No.
No, she does.
Taylor Swift will not be done till she has all of the money.
With how much her ticket prices cost, fuck off during spooky season, okay, Taylor? Because I know you're an avid listener of this show. Fuck right off. Let us have our spooky season and drop that shit in January when nothing's happening. You really have to come in the middle of spooky season when all the horror movies are coming out and possibly fuck things up. Just saying, it's kind of rude. Especially since it just got dropped, like, the other day. This isn't, like, a long time coming. This is like, oh, by the way, I'm dropping a movie. Okay, T-Swift. Anyways.
I've only heard this three times now.
It's fine. So the tour in question has been a resounding success, and Swift is one of the most popular artists in the world right now. As a result, the studio opted to get out of T-Swift's way. Blumhouse head Jason Blum took it in stride by tweeting, "Look what you made me do." The Exorcist believer moves to 10-26. Hashtag Taylor wins.
10-6, not 26.
10-6-23.
There you go.
10-26-3.
Whichever.
Released 20 years ago. You missed it.
Well, hey, I'm just glad that it's coming out. We all have time to see it before, because obviously now we have a baby. Can't go to HHN like we normally do. But my lovely parents gifted us some tickets to go, which we're very appreciative of, since those bitches are expensive as hell.
Yeah.
But that means we have time to go see the movie before we go through the house, because it's weird that people will be going through this house for weeks, for like a month.
Oh, yeah.
Before they can even see the film. Like, God, yeah. I hope it doesn't, like, spoil the film.
Well, it's also kind of hard to appreciate I'm not saying you can't appreciate the set design and the scare actors, but it's hard to appreciate it in the sense of a film, because I haven't seen that yet.
You know, we've learned, like, that the hard way, like not watching Happy Death Day before going through Happy Death Day.
Oh, yeah. We were like, I don't understand.
I don't know what's happening, but yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So
now we know better. If it's going to be there,
do your homework.
Go watch the damn movie.
Do your homework. There's also the fact of the matter that Universal and Blumhouse have a lot riding on this movie. They've actually invested a boatload of cash, around $400 million to be precise. To have Green, the man behind the most recent Halloween trilogy, bring this franchise back to life. They even have Ellen Burstyn to reprise her role as Chris McNeil for the first time since 1978. A full trilogy is already in the works, with The Exorcist Deceiver due in theaters in 2025.
Ooh.
Ooh. So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't hate T-Swift. I think she's got some catchy tunes. She's probably a nice person, but fuck you for ruining, like, you're going to ruin all the spooky movies for everyone, because everyone's going to, like, it's already sold out. I've already checked. At our theater, that fucking opening weekend, fucking sold out. And I'm just like, God damn it. It's going to ruin all the money for the spooky movies. But whatever, it's fine, T-Swift. Make your money.
Hey, get it, girl.
Yeah, I mean, get it, you know, if you can make all the money you can, shit. Going up next here. Saw X director says this one won't just be for the gore freaks. In a new interview with Empire Magazine, Saw X director Kevin Grudert sheds a little light on how the latest installment of this long-running franchise will differ from previous films in the franchise. In short, we're going to be spending a bit more quality time with Tobin Bell's Jigsaw and less time with this latest batch of victims. And by the way, runtime came in at 1 hour and 58, which is the longest Saw. The previous record holder was Saw 3 at 1 hour 48, I believe, although there is some extended director's cut that runs over 2 hours, but longest theatrical. There we go. Okay, tiny baby.
Sorry, she's choking me out.
So, calling Bell's Jigsaw, a.k.a. John Kramer, the center of the story, Grudert promises the characters will be on screen Grudert promises the character will be on screen more than any other Saw. Before adding, quote, Saw X is an emotional journey that you go on with John Kramer and less a slaughterhouse that you experience from the point of view of the victims. Obviously, there will be people who can't handle it, but I think it has a good chance of appealing to all people beyond gore freaks. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I like a little quality time with Jigsaw.
Yeah, it'd be cool to get more into his deal.
Another quote he is saying is this one's pulled back to somewhat a more realistic level, maybe not Saw 1 level simplicity, but close. The more that the audience can get the sense that a smarter engineer, which he is, could figure out what to do with these parts and make it work, the better. Also intriguing, the fact that Saw X does not follow the events of the previous films. Instead, screenwriters Pete Goldfinger and Josh Stolberg are jumping back in time all the way to the period between Saw 1 and 2 to follow Jigsaw as he travels to Mexico in search of medical care. How he'll manage to roll out an entirely new game for a fresh batch of victims while traveling is anyone's guess, but we're eager to find out how he pulls it off.
Yeah, I think that's good that they're pulling it back, because having seen some of the traps, you're like, that is wildly overcomplicated. Like, first you started with guys who were, like, cuffed to poles, to guys who were, like, getting lowered into swirling metal death traps, and you're like, Jigsaw's gotten weird, man. He's going through a phase.
He's getting weird in his old age. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like some of those traps are like the precision you would need to make that make sense and work. Like, but how?
Yeah.
I mean, I know technically he's not the one that did them, but I remember in what was the new one with Chris?
Oh, Spiral from the Book of Saw.
Spiral. Some of those traps that guy was coming up with, you were like,
what?
You could avoid a lot of this. For instance, the one where the glass is shooting at somebody's face. You could easily use any of the objects behind you as a shield. It's glass. It's not like chunks bullets of metal or the finger traps. You're like, if you climb on that platform right there, you would not, in fact, have to do either of the options.
Yeah.
It's like some of the traps get a little bit crazy.
Well, yeah, Spiral, they weren't very thought out, but most of the ones from, like, I'd say the core four, obviously, to me are, you know, I'd say the most realistic. Five and six get a little crazy when you have five people trying to go down the line. You know what I mean? And then Saw Six, where that guy's like, they get so crazy.
A lot of traps where you could easily get screwed over by somebody else, thus defeating the point of.
Well, that's my biggest problem with Saw Six is yeah. It's less about saving people and more about, like, okay, how many people are. I mean, it is about saving people, but you have to kill like three people each time. It's like you choose one or the other. Like, that's not the point of. Yeah, because
his whole point is like, you've done something shitty. Now you need to figure out if you really deserve to live and if you want to live. And if your life is in the hands of somebody else, that's not really.
Yeah.
That defeats the
whole
point.
That's my biggest issue with Saw 6 is it kind of pulls back everything that Jigsaw's about. But again, if you know anything about the Saws, after a certain point, Jigsaw's not doing them, so it makes sense. But also at the same time, if you're continuing his work, you should keep the same morality about blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. Well, but yeah, also, some of those traps are just kind of ridiculous. Like, what was that one with the guy on the ice? Like, what if it happened to be warmer in the building that day and it melted faster?
Jigsaw would never make that mistake. See, he's.
But I'm saying, like, the traps in general, that takes some precision temperature control. How are you controlling that temperature?
That was Saw 4, yeah. That's where Eric Matthews on the block of ice.
Yeah. So I'm glad they're going back to more simplified, like, these traps make more sense.
Yeah, that'll be nice. Plus, it'll be taking place in between 1 and 2, so it would make more sense to have them a little bit simpler. It would not make sense to have, like, Saw 6 level traps in between Saw 1 and 2, because you'd be like, wait, he went up and then back? Yeah, that doesn't make sense. So that's exciting.
You're going to stand in front of several guns. You're going to pick which one fires. Only one of them has a bullet.
Good luck.
Best of luck. Like, what?
Live or die. So that's coming out September 29th. Still waiting on tickets to go on sale for that, but soon enough. I'm going to skip this one because I didn't realize until I was done putting it on the sheet that it's for Halloween Horror Nights in Hollywood. But I will, like, briefly describe what's going on here. So Blumhouse is bringing two live experiences. Uh-oh, the pacifier's out.
It's like pulling the pin out of a freaking grenade,
it really
man.
Is. When
you
is it going to go off?
Not know when this shit's going to go off. She got pissed earlier. She spit it out, got upset, and I didn't realize what she was wiggling around for because I forgot she had spit it out and wouldn't put it back in. I'm like,
So anyway, Blumhouse is bringing two live experiences to Universal Studios Halloween Horror Nights in Hollywood. First up, we have The Purge: Dangerous Waters, which will be presented as a live show. Blah, 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 blah. That's a whole fucking, like, you can go look this up on their website. And then we have Blumhouse Behind the Screams, which is an original concept that showcases a selection of Blumhouse horror films, including the highly anticipated Five Nights at Freddy's, Exorcist Believer, and fan living hits like Megan and the Black Phone. So that's cool for Hollywood. I got really excited because thought it was going to be for us until I read.
That shit's never for us.
I know. Until I read all the way at the bottom that it was for Hollywood. And I was like, you sons of bitches. They're also getting a different house than us that I was upset about. Is it a Megan house? Fuck. Stand by.
Yeah, I think so. I think because we got the Roaming Horde and I think they got a house.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, because they have one house that we don't. And I was like, but like, why does Hollywood always get the fun things? Hollywood.
You know what I wish we could do again, but again, expensive, is the Behind the Screams tours, because those are so much fun.
That wasn't too bad, though. I mean, it was like 106. I mean, it's probably super expensive. Yeah. It's probably super expensive this year. So let's see here. Oh, they only have 8 houses, though, so I guess we do kind of have that over them. Da-da-da, Chucky. Man. Oh, no, Evil Dead Rise. That's what they have. They have an Evil Dead Rise house. And I was like, son of a bitch! I want that. Anyway, so go check that out on the website if you're going to Hollywood. It's not here, so I don't really care. Sorry, Hollywood. I don't care. Moving down here, we have, Cobweb. Cobweb is coming to digital and Blu-ray in September. It's a shame that this wasn't held for a September or October theatrical release, but the good news is we're getting a September digital and Blu-ray release of Cobweb.
You know, Cobweb was really good, and honestly, it was like a sleeper movie because you didn't even know it was coming out. I told you because I happened to see it somewhere.
I had heard about it, but yeah, I'd never. Yeah. So this one hails from Samuel Bowden, the man behind Netflix series Marianne, which we all know had a lot of fans sad to see it end. Cobweb centers around an 8-year-old Peter, plagued by a mysterious constant tap-tap from the inside of his bedroom wall, a tapping that his parents insist is all in his imagination. Gaslighting! As Peter's fears intensifies, he believes that his parents, Lizzie Kaplan and Anthony Starr, could be hiding a terrible, dangerous secret and questions their trust. And for a child, what could be more frightening than that? The movie takes place during Halloween week, with leaves and pumpkins in abundance, making it a perfect addition to your spooky season watch list. Cobweb arrives on Blu-ray, digital, and DVD September 12th from Lionsgate. The release will retail for $21.99 for the Blu-ray, plus digital, and $19.99 for DVD. That's still cheaper than a trip to the theater, so pop some popcorn, settle in, and show this original horror movie some love come September. Yeah, this was one that just came out of nowhere. And
it was really good.
It was so creepy. Also, Lizzie Kaplan, what the doodle is she from again? The fucking...
Oh, you've seen her in...
Cloverfield.
Yes, yeah. You've seen her in Cloverfield. Most people would know her as Janice from Mean Girls.
Damn it, Janet.
Not Janet. I said Janice.
I know, I'm just saying. Yeah.
But yeah, this one... I just happened to see something about it and I was like, hey, this is coming out. And we had no idea. Mm. It was really good. It's a movie where it'll make you say, why are you like this about a lot of characters? And you're like, why are you so mean or so negative? Like, why are you so mean to this child? And frankly, Anthony Starr really needs to be in a film where he's playing a sincere character, because between the dad in this and Homelander.
Oh, that's right. He's
just so unsettling at this point. It's really hard to like picture him not being suspicious.
Ashley, look at me. Yeah. I just typed in Anthony Starr to Letterboxd. That's not going to give me shit. I forgot. It was such an odd mashup, but it weirdly worked. I'm not saying it was a bad mashup, but it was so weird to see, you know, Homelander in this horror film.
This one would do really well as a double feature with Trick or Treat.
Yeah, because they're obviously both take place around Halloween.
And they have some similar notes to them.
Yeah, obviously, Cobweb's not an anthology, but they vibe the same.
Yes, they vibe the same. They've got the storybook quality to them.
Yeah.
And a lot of the same like storytelling kind of beats to them.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, if you haven't seen this or haven't even heard about it, you know, check it out. Get the, you know, rent or because I know we rented it for like, wasn't like $6.99. It wasn't that much. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think so.
I think it was like a $19.99 rental. So
no, it wasn't that much.
Yeah. So you can rent it or you can just buy it in September. And I mean, it is September now. It's coming out September 12th. So that's only about 9 days away, because I believe today is the 3rd. Oh, we got to pay bills. Shit.
Yeah, you're supposed to calculate that shit. I can't send you money if I don't know how much.
I know. But speaking of things that we recently watched, because that is something that we did recently watch. We've been crushing it lately with new releases, because
to the best of our ability.
You really have been crushing it, because you're like, this is here and that's there. And Pope's Exorcist is even on Netflix now. I got to say, Netflix is stepping up their game.
I'm trying to find any new horror movies that we can watch in our house. I'm trying to find them.
Let's see. So recently we've watched Insidious Red Door, The Creeping, Cobweb, Pope's Exorcist, and Haunted Mansion. The Exorcist Red Door. Insidious Red Door, I feel, was decent. Definitely better than Last Key. And I'd say about on par with 3, because I gave them both a 3. But it was, I don't know, it's just so weird. It's like...
We got through a lot of the movie and we were like, oh, this shit's almost over. But like, it doesn't quite, nothing's quite happened yet.
But it
like, stuff was happening, but it just didn't feel like it was, the story was progressing.
Yeah, like It never dragged in any moment, but yeah, it's just like we were 30 minutes before it was over. We were like, oh, this is almost over. Nothing's really happened. Good creepy moments for sure, but yeah, it's like nothing. I don't know. It's so bizarre. I enjoyed it though. I mean, it's something that I would watch again and own, even because I own all the other ones. The Creeping was a weird one.
Yes, it was.
It was bizarre.
I'm still not entirely sure what the point is.
I'm not either.
Because there's a character, like, there's this moment where they're supposed to be like, here's my side of things. You're like, if this is supposed to make me feel for you, I promise it doesn't.
I mean, I promise it doesn't. Let's see. And then The Pope's Exorcist, I actually kind of want to talk about this one for a minute, honestly, because I feel it's, I'm not sure, I'm not sure the 2.6. I don't know what the dealio with the 2.6 is. Obviously, it's not a masterpiece. I don't think it's a 5-star movie. But, I mean, I think we need to give credit where credit is due, especially to Russell Crowe, because he was phenomenal in this.
Yes, I agree. I think he did really well.
I think he did very well. Great Italian accent. Great overall acting. I mean, he spoke Italian as well. Is he Italian? Like,
I was actually wondering if it partially bothered people how much was in Italian.
He's born in New Zealand, so no.
He's not. Oh, my God, no.
I don't know.
But I'm saying it could have bothered people that they had to read a lot more subtitles than I thought you were going to have to read on that.
That's true. I didn't expect that many subtitles to be in there and that much, you know, Italian to be spoken. But I'm one of those people that doesn't care about that. But I know a lot of people genuinely hate reading subtitles, which, I mean, you're going to miss out on a lot of good movies. But, you know, I can understand.
But if you weren't expecting it, like if you go to see Parasite, you know you're reading subtitles. This movie's got a New Zealand actor, and it's called The Pope's Exorcist, and you've got American characters in Italy. You're not expecting to read that many subtitles.
That's true, because you also
have... Sorry, I'm chasing a baby with a pacifier right now.
You're fine. You also have Alex Esso, which you might not know by name, but she was also... Oh my God, she was the lead of Starry Eyes. Holy shit. That's a good one. But she's also in Dr. Sleep. She plays Danny's mom. She's also in Midnight
Wendy.
Mass. Wow.
You say her name.
Wow, Wendy. She's also in Midnight Mass. She plays the lady who ages backward. Like, I guess she ages backward. She gets younger.
Yeah.
And she's fantastic. And then it also has that one chick who I'm like, I know you from something, but it was just, she was in Miss Marvel, the TV show. And I was like, I guess that's what it is. But yeah, Pope's Exorcist, super. I liked it. I gave it a 3.5. I thought it was pretty solid. A lot of good scares. Great acting. And that demonic voice really reminded me of The Conjuring 2's demonic voice. Because I was reading some, I was reading some reviews that were like, oh, the little kid's acting was terrible. That voice wasn't scary. I was like, I liked it. And then there's even a twist with the possession and how it happens. So,
yeah,
I think it's pretty good. You can check that out on Netflix. I'm pretty surprised that Netflix is really stepping it up. I mean, they kind of had to if they didn't want to lose a whole bunch of... a whole bunch of people. don't mind CJ while she's got her. Oh shit! I know. I'm sorry. Let me whisper. But then we saw, last but not least, real quick, we saw Haunted Mansion today. And again, this is another one where I'm not understanding where the 2.7's coming from. Could you speculate with me on that one? Because the Pope's Exorcist just makes sense. All the you know, spoken foreign language, I guess I can understand.
My only thing I didn't like about the film was like some of the ghost CGI, like the ghosts in CGI, great. But when it was like a specific character, they look kind of smooth.
Kind of rubbery.
Kind of rubbery. And I didn't like that. other than that, I liked the film. I thought it was fun. It was I really liked the interesting conversation about grief that they went through.
Yeah. Like Keith Stanfield.
Depression and grief and, you know, the sense of community that they were finding within the film. Plus, it was hilarious. So,
it was so funny.
I mean, I like Lakeith Stanfield in anything I've seen him in, so.
Well, I mean, and it's okay, so you have Rosario Dawson, then you have the kid whose name is Chase W. Dillon, who was hysterical.
I can't wait to see more of him.
Yeah.
He had a great range.
Yeah, he has great range and great comedic timing. And then you have Lakeith Stanfield, Owen Wilson, Tiffany Haddish, Danny DeVito, Jared Leto, Jamie Lee Curtis. I mean, that is, if anything, you know, you go for the cast, but, you know, there was really solid camera work, cinematography. The CG that was there was, you know, for the most part, good. They paid homage to...
The actual ghosts were
good. They looked great. They paid homage to the Hollywood Haunted Mansion and the... I don't know if it's Hollywood, California.
Yes.
And the Orlando Haunted Mansion, which was really cool because I didn't know...
And there were lots of little nods to the stories.
Oh, yeah. No, you're fine. Like subtle things too. Like when they got when Tiffany Haddish got pulled back in the chair, like that's
the
exactly.
The chair was shaped like the ride.
Yeah, the chair was shaped like the ride, and in Orlando you go down the hill like that. So I was like, oh, that's super cool. And then of course they put the hitchhiking ghosts in there real quick, but there was so many nods to the original. And then honestly, Jamie Lee Curtis as Madame Leota was great. That was a great addition, especially her corporeal form where she was fucking dressed to the nines with that
big ass hat,
the big ass headdress or hat. Yeah, we actually saw this out at Disney Springs at the AMC, and it was in their biggest theater. And I can only assume that because it's on Disney property, so they're probably like, "You got to keep that shit there."
I mean, it makes sense if they're going to have their Halloween stuff going on and it's on
Disney. That's true.
That's something else they can get people to go do.
I'm surprised they didn't release it closer to Spooky Time. Although I know Mickey's Not So Scary already going on.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy.
And one day.
We'll take Tiny Baby CJ.
Squeaky Baby CJ
down here. Squeaky Baby.
We'll get to go to that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, I've never been, but I know you can trick or treat.
Yes, you can.
Which is pretty dope.
The parade is also apparently super cool because it's all spooky characters and Haunted Mansion characters.
Oh.
Oh, yeah. The bride in that, whose name I can't think of off the top of my head.
I don't remember either.
She...
Her name is the bride.
Yeah, but in the house, she's called like Constance or something.
Something like that.
She is cool because she's in one of those things that makes it look like she's just gliding along the ground. And that's pretty cool.
And Jared Leto as the
Hatbox
ghost. Greatest performance ever. Didn't even know it was him.
Accurate.
Okay, you know what? He is actually really good in Requiem for a Dream. I can't deny him that.
And I'm not saying there's not things he's been good in. He's just crazy.
For the most part, I'm just like, eh. But yeah, I remember seeing his name and I was like, who are you? And I looked it up and I was like, oh, the Hatbox ghost. I couldn't recognize your voice. And were you even in the film or did you just do the voice?
I think he just did the voice.
Yeah, unless they had him all, you know, like in a green suit, but I don't even know why you would do that. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. That's another one I gave a 3.5. Thought it was solid, good time. Don't understand the low rating. I mean, we were really the only ones laughing as loud as we were in the theater.
That's true.
I was like, are the punchlines not hitting for everyone? I don't know. Was this not funny?
I thought it was hilarious.
It was fucking hysterical. I'm sitting there cackling while I'm trying to eat my popcorn and drink my soda. And you just hork down all the Reese's Pieces without me. I got one tiny handful.
Don't regret anything.
Wow. That's what I get for not being quick enough.
It is.
That's fair, though.
You had lollipops. I didn't have any lollipops.
All right. That's fair. All right. Let's move on to the topic at hand here. Lake Placid. I know. We're going to talk about the Alligator movie, CJ. From 1999. Released on June 16th of that year in the USA. If I could find my fucking mouse. There it is. Oh, now I'm all the way up top. Good grief. This is rated R for violent creature attacks and related gore and for language. We've got mild sex and nudity, severe violence and gore, moderate profanity, about 13 fucks, mild alcohol, drugs, and smoking, and moderate frightening and intense scenes, coming in at a runtime of an hour and 22 minutes. Listed as an action comedy horror, directed by... So here's why this movie is as amazing as it is, aside from the fact that it's an alligator movie, aside from the cast, aside from all that, and how witty and funny it is. Directed by Steve Miner. Oh, God. Sorry.
Shut the fuck up.
Sorry. Shut the fuck up. You're so loud. Steve Miner, who also directed Friday the 13th Part 2 and 3 and House and Halloween H2O. Written by a man named David E. Kelly, who wrote 97 episodes of Doogie Howser, M.D., 141 episodes of Chicago Hope, 112 episodes of Ally McBeal, 167 episodes of The Practice, 81 episodes of Boston Legal, 101 episodes of Boston Public, and then 101 episodes of Boston Legal, and many, many other shows. Composed by John Ottman, who also composed The Cable Guy, Halloween H2O, Urban Legends Final Cut, Eight-Legged Freaks, Gothica, Hide and Seek, House of Wax, and Orphan.
Wow.
Amazing. Cinematography by a man named Darren Okada, or Okada, who also did the cinematography for Phantasm 2, Black Sheep, the Chris Farley one, not the superior one that we did. Hello?
I know, I'm... Sorry, okay. Just start breathing. I was listening to what she was doing.
So yeah. Yes,
there's two kinds of black sheep.
The Chris Farley one and the crazy bloody one. Also,
and the one with the actual sheep.
Yes. Halloween H2O, Mean Girls, and Movie 43.
Oh boy.
Oh boy. So yeah, you've got three people that worked on Halloween H2O. Edited by a man named Marshall Harvey, who also edited Ernest Goes to Camp, The Burbs, Alligator 2 The Mutation, Drop Dead Fred, Small Soldiers, and The Hole.
Nice.
Also edited by a man, okay, this is where it gets insane, by a man named Paul Hirsch, who also edited Star Wars Episode 4 A New Hope, Star Wars Episode 5 The Empire Strikes Back, Blowout, Creepshow, Footloose, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Steel Magnolias, Raising Kane, Mission Impossible, and Mission Impossible 4, I think, Ghost Protocol, and then the Adventures of Pluto Nash.
And the fact that that didn't end his career is amazing.
I know. So, you look at everyone behind this movie, and you're like, wow, no wonder this movie is fucking amazing. Besides the actors, because actors, we have Bill Pullman as Jack Wells, who was also in Independence Day as as President Thomas J. Whitmore, and Spaceballs as Lone Star. Then we have Bridget Fonda as Kelly Scott, who was also in Single White Female as Allison Jones. Is that something that would be well known?
Yeah, Single okay. White Female was very popular at the time.
Okay, good. That was like her top billed, and she was also that was her most known for, and then she was top billed in it. So I figured that was a safe choice.
Yeah, that's one of those psychological thriller movies.
Oh. Then we have Oliver Platt as Hector Sear, or is it Sire? Sear? Sear?
Sear.
Sear. Also in The Three Musketeers as Porthos, and many other things.
So many other things.
So many other things.
Ready
so many,
to rumble.
Yeah, so many other great things. I know. Then we've got Brendan Gleeson as Sheriff Hank Kjoh. Also in Harry Potter 4, 5, and 7 Part 1 as Alistair Mad-Eye Moody, and in Bruges as Ken, an underrated, it's not underrated, that's a masterpiece. Everyone knows that. And then we have Betty White as Mrs. Dolores Bickerman, who I really should not have to explain. Golden Girls, so much shit. She was like older than sliced bread.
That's true.
That's true. Is that going to be your response to everything?
Yes.
Moving down, estimated budget of $35 million, box office gross of $56.9 million, which isn't great, but when I tell you all the things it went up against, that's a win. Filmed in various places of British Columbia, Canada. You can watch this on Amazon for a $3.99 rental or just buy the Shout Factory Blu-ray. Now, movies that came out around the same time, we have Austin Powers, The Spy Who Shagged Me, Tarzan, Big Daddy, Wild Wild West, American Pie, The Blair Witch Project, Muppets from Space, which is one of my favorite Muppet movies, Eyes Wide Shut, Drop Dead Gorgeous, The Haunting, Inspector Gadget, Deep Blue Sea, The Iron Giant, Mystery Men, and Bowfinger. Like, what the fuck?
Okay, I haven't seen four of those. Go.
American Pie.
Correct.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yep.
Inspector Gadget.
Nope.
Ooh. Wild Wild West?
I've seen that so many fucking times.
Okay, well, you've seen Spy Who Shagged Me. You've seen Tarzan. Big Daddy?
I've seen Big Daddy so many times.
What the fuck? Blair Witch Project?
No.
What? There's nothing. What, the Iron Giant?
Yeah.
You haven't seen The Iron Giant?
And you got one more.
You haven't seen The Iron Giant.
Loud guy, be loud.
You have not. Are you, is this a joke?
No, I've never. I've seen part of it. I never got to finish it.
Oh, my God. And Deep Blue Sea?
Yeah, there you go.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, what the hell? Who? Oh, I can't. I'm sorry. I'm trying to comprehend. I usually don't get upset with people when they haven't seen movies, but The Iron Giant, that's like an iconic movie.
No, I know.
Oh, it's not going to have the same effect this many years later. It's going to be just like that other movie that didn't work for you.
Oh,
the
yeah.
The Ring.
Oh, yeah.
The Ring.
Yeah, I saw that way too late.
Oh, I mean, that's a little different, though. It's a horror movie. This is just a great fucking whatever. Oh, cannot comprehend. Specific horror moments. What do you have?
Oh, for this? Oh, God.
All of them.
The whole movie's a gem. I don't know. There's really not one that's like a specific, like, this is a horror moment. I do like when What's-Her-Face gets hit with the moose head.
What's-Her-Face?
Yeah, Bridget Fonda.
Kelly.
She's like, yeah, Kelly, you threw it at me. That was a good one.
And then she slapped him twice.
And then when that guy gets decapitated, I guess that would also go under favorite kill.
Yeah. My horror moment's just the first kill when... the guy scuba diving, and then Brendan Gleeson pulls him onto the boat, and he's cut in half. First time I saw that, I wasn't really expecting him to be maybe like missing a leg or something, but actually cut in half. I was like, ah, that was a lot, because this movie does not shy away from violence, which is great. Favorite kill, you already said.
Yep.
Yeah, the guy who gets beheaded on the boat. It's just so unexpected, so quick, and you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah, it was a good time.
It's a good time. Favorite character? I mean, all of them. I mean, who do you not like in this movie? Because I do not have a least favorite character at all.
That's true, though my favorite is still Oliver Platt.
Okay, my favorite is Betty White, Mrs. Bickerman.
Oh, yeah. This is a dick. If I had a dick, this is where I tell you to suck it.
Wow, thanks for telling everyone my favorite line.
Oh, my God, I didn't know that was going to be your favorite line.
Really? I literally said, when she said in the movie, I was like, and there it is.
You also said you weren't going to tell me your favorite line, so I wasn't expecting that.
Well, that's my favorite line, jerk.
Sorry.
What's your favorite line?
The longer you live, the more sex you get to have with your sister.
Fine, I have another one that I wrote down just in case.
I mean, it's the movie's fucking littered with good lines.
Well, it's for good reason, because the guy who wrote it wrote sitcoms, so it just has that. It has the quick, like, just upbeat. Like, there's not a dull moment of conversation. Everything out of everyone's mouth is either sarcastic. Or
that movie is like 100% sarcasm.
Yeah.
Sorry, it's like 90% sarcasm and 10% Bridget Fonda getting knocked over.
And Brendan Gleeson falling into traps. I have another line that I thought was funny. It's Bridget Fonda's character. She's like, thank you. It's so nice to know that my tax dollar found its way to you, fuck shit. And I was like, wow, fuck shit. That's a great one. I'm going to use that. Use that today in traffic. It was great. yeah, I don't have a least favorite character. There's literally no one that is not likable. Even Bridget Fonda, as insufferable as she is, she still has some of the greatest lines. She's so fucking funny.
Oh, like how on people in Maine, she's like, what is Maine filled with museum bigots?
Yeah, everything she says, because she's like annoyed the entire time, but she's so fucking funny.
We should have kept a count of the things she's got a thing about.
Ah, damn it. That would have, like, a thing counter.
Yeah. And I'm allergic to timber. Like, what?
What, do you just not go outside ever? Jeez.
You're allergic to all wood.
All wood. Great. It's like being allergic to grass. IMDb summary. Three people attempt to stop a gigantic crocodile who is terrorizing residents in Black Lake, Maine. But, don't they go back and forth on calling it a crocodile and a gator? I swear to God, someone's like, it's an alligator. And they're like, it's a crocodile. Ah, I don't.
No.
Are you sure?
They're talking about, they have a discussion about how gators would be more likely, but the crocodile, but that it's definitely a crocodile and how did it get there and whatnot.
But crocodiles open bottom.
What?
So alligators open the top of their jaw, crocodiles open the bottom of their jaw, and this one's definitely opening the top of its jaw, unless I have that backwards.
Their snouts are different. That's how you can tell them apart.
I was taught that in school. Did someone fuck that shit up?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Really? Is that something I just heard from someone and took it as truth?
Sounds like it.
Oh, fuck. Did I just come off really dumb? I swear to God, I don't know.
Well, should we get to the review instead of you Googling
Fine.
Fucking facts?
Anyways. All right, well, why don't you give us a brief history? Give us a brief intro to it, and then we'll just talk about some fucking great parts.
Sure. So the film opens up on a deputy and, I guess, sheriff.
Yeah, sheriff. Can you cue?
And Brendan Gleeson. A man who is from Fish and Wildlife or something. I can't remember exactly who
Bill Pullman?
From. No, Jesus. The guy in the scuba outfit,
okay,
in the beginning.
Relax. Jeez.
So they are out in a lake, and the guy is going to tag a beaver as part of their research to track the beaver population. And in the midst of scuba diving around, dude gets bit in half, but you don't see why.
Yeah, you don't see the cause of it. I was hoping it was a giant beaver.
However, they do find a tooth, which leads us to Kelly, who is a, oh my God, I just forgot the word. It's just the paleontologist.
Paleontologist,
who works in a museum, and she is getting dumped by her boyfriend who works there, and it turns out it's because she's getting dumped for her best friend, who used to date him forever ago. So cool. So for some reason, she has to go out to Maine to see a tooth because it looks prehistoric. So they get out there. They think it's probably some sort of giant gator or crocodile. And they meet up with Fish and Wildlife, who is Bill Pullman. They all go out to the lake and then are later joined by Oliver Platt's character, who is a man known to swim with crocodiles all over the world. And he is a rich
entrepreneur. I don't know.
I'd say he's a kook.
yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, he's obsessed with crocodiles. He flies in on his own helicopter that is painted to look like a crocodile.
Look like a crocodile.
And all these people have to find this crocodile, prove that it even exists in the first place while it's still killing people, and stop it from, well, in fact, killing people. Yeah, that's pretty much the plot of the film.
Yeah, pretty easy there.
You got a good text message you sent in there?
No, I was just looking up the first on-screen appearance of the gator in... Because in Jaws, it's like 47 minutes or something like that, which is crazy. And it doesn't even have that much screen time. And when I tell you how much the screen time this one has, it's going to, it doesn't even make sense. But yeah, I love the, it's not really a cold open because you get the title card before you go to the lake, but it's a great open, really sets the tone for the rest of the film and sets, you know, obviously shows you what great practical effects you're going to have. And, so, yeah, I really think the comedy works in this. The cast obviously works in this. Practical effects are great. And I don't like the people that say this is a Jaws ripoff. I know we've heard
it
that a lot.
It really isn't.
First of all, Jaws came out in 1970 fucking whatever, 3 or 4. This is 1999. We're talking 20-something years later. I don't, besides
yeah,
the fact
really
that it's
really hanging on by a thread there on that idea.
Yeah, besides the fact that it's a giant creature in the water, I don't get how
this is definitely... sold more as a comedy.
Yeah.
The setup isn't even the same. Like, there's no one on this fucking lake.
There's no mayor that's letting people go into this lake because he wants to get money. It's not even, I don't understand.
Yeah, it's not people. they're actively trying to find it to stop it from killing people.
Yeah.
But they're not even sure how big it is.
Nope.
They're not going out there to save tourists. It's like one guy's been killed at this point. Their knowledge when they start looking for it. So
not a Jaws ripoff. I don't understand. But yeah, I just want to point out that I would never be scuba diving in a lake. You know, clear water, sure. But scuba diving in a lake, I'm good.
I'm just going to skip scuba diving altogether, and I think I'm going to feel a lot better.
That's a good plan. Did you know that scuba was an acronym?
Okay, what is it?
Do you have any guesses?
No.
Okay, self-contained underwater breathing apparatus.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Also, I find it extremely hilarious. So the guy that Kelly got dumped by, wasn't that also her boss, too?
Yes.
And she gets dumped for Mariska Hargitay?
Yes.
Yeah. Mariska Hargitay.
And then she's got this whole thing going with Bill Pullman's character, the Fish and Wildlife, and they don't even want her there, and she's pretty much pissed that she's like, this is bullshit, I'm gonna go.
Yeah, she doesn't want to be there at all. She gets very upset.
She also is upset that they're not letting her go along, so she's like demanding to go along. And there's this really fun dynamic between the main cast because Bill Pullman's the more like kind of the sheriff, so to speak. Not actually the sheriff.
Yeah.
But he's the one who's kind of keeping everybody level, running the show, trying to keep everybody calm. You've got Kelly there, Bridget Fonda, who is constantly getting knocked out of the boat.
Gets hit with two heads.
Yeah.
The moose and then the guy that got beheaded's head.
She's definitely the fish out of water there because she's in a scenario nice. She doesn't really belong in. Then you've got Brendan Gleeson, who's the sheriff who thinks the whole thing is just stupid and doesn't really... It really just wants to blow the gator up. And you've got Oliver Platt, who is extremely sarcastic, constantly pissing off Brendan Gleeson's character. Like, those two are, like, chomping at the bit to punch each other in the face most of the film in a very funny way because they keep having these great moments where they'll just be sitting and chit-chatting with each other, but then they'll say something really rude to each other. Most of the time, it's fat jokes.
they get into so many pissing contests in this movie.
So many. And Oliver Platt's, like, he's just a rich tycoon kind of guy who really likes doing this, so he believes that the crocodile is like almost godly.
Yeah, he goes into that, how they're like the, you know, people used in ancient Egyptian times or whatever, how they were revered as gods or they were worshipped or something.
I mean,
like
they've been that. No, that's true. They've been worshipped in way more cultures all over the world.
That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, shit, they are dinosaurs. So, I mean, they've been around for a hot minute.
Yes, they have.
Speaking of Oliver Platt and Brendan Gleeson, though, I always find it crazy in situations like this in movies where someone's aiming a gun. And some, like when Brendan Gleeson's like, he hears something in the woods and he's aiming his gun and then he pulls down the brush and Oliver Platt's like, Jesus Christ, like, how does that not scare you enough to shoot them by accident? I would have pulled the trigger because someone's, I got, you know, like a loud noise happened.
And we'd like to think it's because he's a professional.
Okay, that's fair. I guess I'm not a professional. And then that's when, you know, Brendan Gleeson eventually turns around. I think he falls in the trap in that one.
Yeah, there's a running gag where all the traps that Oliver Platt keeps setting, Brendan Gleeson keeps falling into or getting snared up in.
Yeah, he falls into the, like, the what do you call that? Just like a, like not a trap door. It's the thing where you just put sticks and cover it with leaves, whatever
it's
that
a
is.
Pit.
A pit. And then he gets also caught up in the rope that pulls him up. And he's like, it's a counterbalance.
Just that's a snare.
A snare. Just pull it down.
Yeah. I think what's also great, too, is they're really having this. Is there even a crocodile? That's impossible. There can't possibly be one. And after Brendan Gleeson gets caught in a snare and is chasing Oliver Platt, that's when they are approached by a bear. And they're like, oh, shit, bear. No, oh shit, crocodile, because that crocodile pops out of the water and drags that bear down.
I'm pretty sure that is like the first moment you actually see it in its full form. And that's when it's confirmed that, oh shit, it is a big alligator. And then, and this CG to
crocodile.
This, sorry, crocodile. And the CG to this day still is incredible. I don't.
Towards the end of the film, it's a little more obvious, but the camera work they did for that scene.
So good.
Made it less obvious.
Well, because in the end of the movie too, they kind of switch back and forth between real animatronic and the CG, so it kind of, you know, you get real one and then you get the fake
one. Yes, they do a really good job using a practical animatronic gay crocodile for as much as possible.
A gay crocodile.
A gay crocodile.
Yeah, because they're, you know, they built a real, like, I think it's either 25 or 30 foot, you know, animatronic that works, eyes, you know, blink, mouth opens, everything. It's pretty cool. But yeah, the CG still holds up very well for being, you know, 1999. I mean, this movie's 14 years old at this point. So
yeah, it's doing well.
Doing very well. I want to talk about Kelly, though, real quick, because I have a question for you that I'm wondering if you can answer. So after the whole debacle where she gets dumped and then she gets sent off by her boy or ex-boyfriend, I guess, at that point, I'm wondering, do you think that Kelly was always like this, or do you think that situation made her just so bitter about the situation? Like, you know what I mean? Did the circumstances or did the events leading to Maine make her that bitter, or was she just always like that? What do you think?
I'm going to say she was probably always like that, but we'll never know.
Yeah, because I like to subscribe to the idea that she was a fine, normal person. Then she had her boyfriend cheat on her. She got left by her boyfriend. Then her boyfriend sent her to Maine, which she had to camp at a lake and try to find an alligator or a crocodile for no reason. So I feel like I really feel like this whole turn of events made her into just a completely bitter person. I mean, that would change me, too, I think.
What I think is funnier is the fact that she talks about skipping rocks on a lake when she was a kid and yet is like totally freaked out by being at a lake. You're like, but didn't you just say you used to spend time at a lake? What happened at that lake that traumatized you so much?
Yeah, because she's, we had to sleep in tents. Is there a bathroom? Like, well, what did you do when you went? Did you just go to the lake for the day? I don't understand.
Could have been in a cabin.
Probably was a
cabin.
Some
people live on a lake, much like Betty White's character.
Much like Betty White, who is obviously the best in this movie, and she just admits openly to killing her husband in front of the sheriff and the you know, Bill Pullman's character.
Yeah, because they're like, she has to know about this gator.
Of course.
Or a crocodile. It's really hard not to do that.
I know.
She has to know about it, and she just kind of feigns not knowing anything. And she's really funny because they do eventually find out that she did know and the gator did in fact kill her husband. And God, it's so funny because she's like, no, I killed him. And you're like, okay. So like
just admitting to murder in front of a fucking
sheriff. The crocodile
sheriff.
Accidentally killed my husband. Like, okay, it was an accident, so that's why I didn't report it. Like, what?
Wait, what? So you'd rather tell the cops and wildlife that he got to the point in his life where he didn't want to be alive and he begged you to kill him, so you killed him and buried him in the yard, as opposed to saying the real thing, which is the horse got out of the little stable, ran towards the water, the crocodile was coming after it, your husband tried to intervene, and the crocodile ate him instead.
Yep.
But her reasoning behind that is because, well, I didn't want anybody to come down here and kill the crocodile. So she's like, it's so weird how, and it's also kind of cute. She's like, she wants to protect the crocodile. It's like her and the crocodile.
But she's also like feeding her cows to it.
Yeah, feeding her cows to it, because that's how they find out she was lying, is they see her leading a cow to the water, and Bridget Fonda's like, look 10 feet into the water, and the gator's just sitting there like, or croc is just sitting there mouth open, ready for, you know, fucking
dinner.
And that's when they realize that she's lying. I just think it's so funny. She's like, I just want to protect this crocodile. He's my best friend. It's his lake.
Which I also like that when they do finally confirm what it is, they know that the people who are going to come deal with it are just going to kill it because it's too big to trap because it's 30 feet.
Mm.
So they decide to put together a plan to try to trap it themselves so that way they won't kill it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the plan was pretty interesting too. You know, they did the best they could, and we get a surprise at the end of the two crocodiles, which is great. I couldn't remember if I was thinking of Crawl, because they do that in Crawl where you're like, oh shit, second, you know, gator. Well, that's a gator in that circumstance. But this one, I was like, I swear there was another crocodile that pops out of the water. It does. There's another one that pops out at the end, and then Brendan Gleeson just blows that shit to smithereens, which is a great practical effect right there.
By the way you can tell a difference between a gator and a crocodile. Crocodiles have a pointed snout, whereas gators have a rounded, flat snout.
No, I knew that. I could have sworn the thing I said was true. I either got taught that wrong, or someone was just bullshitting me.
No idea.
No, the world may. I'll never know.
Yep, that's true.
I'll never know. Let's see what else I've got here. Do feeding the thing. Oh yeah, going back to Mrs. Bickerman. She was feeding that thing for 6 years, which was great. So obviously she. I want to know, was it just a tiny baby gator that swam up to you and you're like, I'm going to feed you, and then just got bigger and bigger and bigger?
I'm going to say yes.
Like, look at this little guy. Oh.
Well, you know, it's probably fairly large by that time because it didn't grow 30 feet in 6 years. That'd be insane.
That's true. It was probably a good sized gator or crocodile. God damn it. Can't even with this movie. Nope. But yeah, is there anything else you'd like to say about Lake Placid?
Highly underrated. People need to get over their weird Jaws thing. This movie's hilarious. Just so many quotable lines and just such a good time.
And that's the thing. Like, I'm just not understanding what people don't like. You got a great cast. You've got great comedy. You've got great effects. It's only an hour and 22 minutes. You're in and out. There is not one single slow part in this movie. You get a surprise twist. Not twist, but you get a surprise at the end with two crocodiles. And it's like, I wonder if you know, the main crocodile was a guy and that was his, like, you know, partner in life. And why he blew her up to smithereens. Thanks for that.
Yeah. It's
probably why he gave up and was like, fine, just take me. I don't care. Put me on the back of the flatbed, you bastards. But yeah, I don't really understand what the problem is with this movie.
Yeah, I don't either.
I see one review that's like 2.5 stars from Joshy. It's like, it's okay. The movie isn't as funny as it wishes to be. I don't get.
You have no fucking sense of humor.
Do people just not have a sense of humor, or is it because it's, you know, listed as a horror, but there's not, like, I don't know. I'm gonna do a poll. I'll put in the Spotify thing, thumbs up or thumbs down on this movie, and see how many people vote, because I just don't understand the hatred for this movie. 2.7 out of 5 is criminal. I don't understand. But yeah,
I don't think we ever will.
It's fine. We love it, and that's all that matters. And I'm just glad I found someone who enjoys it as much as I do, because I've always loved this movie.
It's a family classic.
For you, it's a family classic. Oh, man. Yes, Lake Placid from 1999. Love this movie. If you don't, I'm sorry. And I'll maybe try watching it again. Maybe give it another chance, you know?
Maybe.
See if it works for you this time. I've got two taglines for you in the post-review stuff here. You'll never knew what bit you. I feel like you would. You'll see it coming. And part mystery, part thriller, part missing. I like that. Some trivia here. The man who created the crocodile for the film was none other than Stan Winston. Winston was also the creator of the Monsters and Aliens and Jurassic Park.
Wow.
Which does not surprise me because those are both movies with great practical effects. The crocodile as CG or animation. The crocodile as CG or animatronic has about 3 minutes and 43 seconds of screen time, which is crazy.
Yeah, that's really short.
It's very short, but I was when we were watching it on this last go, I was, you know, kind of like not timing it, but I was like, no, that makes sense. I didn't believe it. And I was like, no, he really doesn't have a lot of screen time.
No, not really.
Not really at all. Filming of the movie had to be postponed due to poor weather conditions. Director Steve Miner took on directing duties for Halloween H2O while he was waiting to shoot Lake Placid.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, I love Halloween H2O. And I still got to get you to watch. There was a series of movies that. You haven't watched most of those, right?
Yes.
The largest crocodile in captivity was Lo Long, who measured 6.17 meters, 20 feet, 3 inches, when he died from pneumonia in February 2013 in the Philippines. A crocodile depicted in the movie was about 10 feet longer. Yeah, they said he was like 30 feet.
Yeah.
Fuck that shit. I'm good. I don't even want to deal with a 3-foot crocodile or alligator. Near the beginning of Alligator 1980, a medical examiner tells Robert Forrester about how they got a big toe once without the rest of the body, and then they had a funeral. The detective replies, must have been a pretty small casket. This joke is mirrored in Lake Placid when Oliver Platt asks Brandon Gleason if the big toe they've discovered is the man that was killed, and Gleason replies, he seemed taller. Which is cool. I didn't even know that they threw homage to the original alligator. You got something to say, CJ? No?
No, she's out.
She out. Only took so much time. Rated 5.8 out of 10 on IMDb, 2.7 out of 5 on Letterboxd. Criminal.
Really is.
Has a 47% on the tomato meter and a 37% audience score. I gave this a 4.5 out of 5, and I already know that you gave it a 5 star, which makes this a Frightmare certified slap. Similar movies according to Letterboxd, we have Tremors, Eight-Legged Freaks, Slither, The Meg, and The Wolf of Snow Hollow. And similar movies according to IMDb, we have Deep Blue Sea, Anaconda, Lake Placid 2, Lake Placid 3, and Lake Placid Legacy. Do you know how many Lake Placid movies there are?
More than necessary.
More than necessary. There's also Lake Placid versus Anaconda.
Yeah, I knew about that.
Which I have on DVD, and it is as bad as it sounds.
It sounds fucking awful.
It's so ridiculous. Yeah, there's too many Lake Placid movies. I would like to check out some of them, but at a certain point, it's like there was no need for any of them.
Just the first one was fine. That was enough.
Well, especially because the way the first one ends, you've got Betty White. Do they ever explain where those little gators come? And that's why
they're clearly their babies.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I clearly think that one was a male, one was a female, because there's little babies. They don't explicitly say where the little tiny babies come from, but the ending shot of the movie is Betty White, you know, sitting in the water, like got bread, and she's feeding these little gators. She's like, come to mama, nibble on mama's toes. And I'm like, that's such a great ending. So to play off of that and not bring her back, it just seems like a weird move. It's like it's sequels that never needed to get made ever.
Yeah.
Like sequels that never needed to get made, but that are greater, like the Psycho sequels. Those are all great sequels, but these, it's just like, let's not. I'm not reading funny or bad reviews because fuck the hate on this movie. I'm not here for it.
Accurate.
We're not gonna do it. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and Slasher app at Frightmares Podcast. Our email is stayspooky@outlook.com. You can also follow me personally on Letterboxd at Dr. Proctor. You are
Watson LMP90.
Watson LMP90. CJ, what's your Letterboxd?
She's still asleep.
Sleeping on the job.
Yeah, she is.
Anyways, join us next week when me and my buddy Michael will be doing a Stuart Gordon movie from the 80s. He only did like 4 or something like that. So enjoy that. Can you take a guess? It's not Reanimator.
I literally have no idea.
You don't know who Stuart Gordon is, do you?
No.
Are you ready to go?
Yes, my back is on fire right now.
All right. So until next week, guys, stay tuned and
stay spooky.